This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back, I'm Stanford Chidge, and you're listening to the Chelsea Fancast, and Mark's buzzing. He's enjoying the show so much tonight. We've actually just been having a really good chat with the people in Mixlr while we're on a little break. I've got Mark Worrell in the house with us tonight. Hello, Mark.
Buonasera.
We've got the superlative Jonathan Kidd, who I had the pleasure of seeing on Saturday night, more of which in part four, but I also saw Jonathan in the cock. He made a rare appearance to have a bit of cock last night, didn't you, Jonathan?
I a dashing appearance, in and out.
It was good to see you. And Rick, me and Rick had a lovely chat, didn't we?
And he commented on my hat. He said he thought it was a bit crumpled.
I'm bored of Rick being very rude about everybody's hats. He was rude about my flat cap again, and I said, piss off, you've got a stupid woolly excuse for a flat cap on. And he got all upset and said, it's my Hoxton hat. So there we go. Now, last but by no means least, we've also got the fantastic, great friend of mine, Mr. Tim Rolls. Now, Tim needs no excuse to be on the Chelsea Fancast. He's also proved unequivocally tonight that he can master the technology, so there are no issues on that front. But he needs no, he doesn't have to have an excuse to come on the show. Tim is welcome whenever he wants to, because I love him that much. But there is a specific reason why we've got Tim on the show tonight. And it's one that I, for one, am incredibly excited about, because Tim, he's launching a crowdfunding campaign this Thursday. But Tim has got a book in the pipeline. And, of course, also very serendipitous that we've got Marco on the show tonight as well, because, of course, Marco's Gate 17 Publishing Company is publishing it. But the book is called Diamonds. It's very difficult to say, but it's Diamonds, Dynamos and Devils, The Transformation of Chelsea FC under Tommy Doherty. So it's basically all about the wonderful early 60s, mid-60s side Doherty's Diamonds, a team that, because I was born in 1965, I never saw. First of all, Tim, what was the idea behind it? I have a suspicion there may have been some personal reasons behind this one.
Well, partly. I when I retired, I decided that I'd never written anything before, anything for sort of websites or fancasts or anything. I actually started to actually quite enjoy it. And then I thought, well, the next thing to do would be write a book. And I actually spoke to Mark and I spoke to Rick Glanville. And I wanted to do a Chelsea one, but a book that no one else had written about an era that I vaguely remembered. And this, no one has written a book specifically on those six seasons from 1961 to 1967. My first Chelsea game was 3 weeks before Doherty left Chelsea. My first game was against Stoke in September 67. And Doherty left 3 weeks later. So there's personal reasons. But it's a fascinating subject. Sorry?
I think that was Marco. What's going on, Marco?
The door opened and closed. Misty's going to be putting an appearance in a minute.
Yeah, you've just been upstaged by Misty, Tim. But sorry, mate, carry on.
That's fine and well. No, it just seemed an interesting period because Chelsea transformed. When Doherty took over, the players trained by running the dog track at Stamford Bridge and having a kick around in the car park. Training ended at 12 o'clock because there was greyhound training taking place at lunchtime. The manager, Ted Drake, didn't have a coach and he didn't want to waste his time spending time with the players when he could sit in his office. So Chelsea, having won the league under Drake 5 years early, were basically a shambles. And in 6 years, Doherty changed the club completely. He got rid of all the old guard. He brought in the youngsters that had won the Youth Cup in 1960 and 1961. He brought in proper training, got the training ground organised at Mitcham. He bought Eddie McCready for £5,000. He bought George Graham for £5,000. So they both, Graham only stayed at Chelsea 2 years, but they were both fantastic players. And when he left, and we'll talk maybe in a bit about why he left, but the club had changed completely. Chelsea were competing for honours. They reached the European semi-final. They had international players. And 6 years early, no one could have seen any of that happening because the club was basically in stasis. It was just, it completely stagnated. They got £90,000 or whatever it was for selling Jimmy Greaves. He, unfortunately, Doherty wasn't able to buy him back. And the club weren't going to use that money. And I think the key point is that he brought in Peter Bonetti, Ken Shelato, Barry Bridges, Terry Venables, Bert Murray. And he played them. And he played them week in, week out. And they became known as Doherty's Diamonds. He augmented it, as I say, with the likes of George Graham, Eddie McCready. Kept a couple of experienced players in particularly in John Mortimer, brought Ron Harris through, made him captain very young. And Chelsea fans in their 60s now, there's so much affection for Doherty and for those players from people just a bit older than me, because as I say, I only saw one game under his reign, but people who were sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years older than me. I interviewed some for the book and got quotes from them. And the passion they have is unbelievable. So it was, you know, I started writing it and I just got more and more wrapped up in it, you know, which is good, because if you don't want to be writing a book, you're not interested in. So
true enough. Yeah.
And it is the first book I've ever written. It's taken me, as Mark will tell you, I was wildly optimistic in how long it would take. And he said, take as long as it takes, Tim, you've got to get it right. And it's actually taken me 4 years from the initial idea.
Wow.
To where we are now. Now, some of that's personal reasons about one or two things going on outside, but how people write books and hold down full-time jobs and have families, I just do not know. Because okay, I've had to do a lot of research, but everything takes longer than you think. The research, the writing, the production process, and the marketing. But you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm now waiting with some nervousness for the next stage.
And of course, you and Mark have worked obviously quite closely together on this. I mean, yep. You know, Mark, this is a path that you've trodden many, many times before, either writing them yourself or supporting people like Tim to do them. And I know that there's another book coming out in a few weeks' time, which I'll mention at the end of the show. But, you know, I would imagine it's been quite fun working with Tim on this.
Yeah, I mean, Tim's enthusiasm for this project has been quite mesmerising, really. Because I think maybe I wasn't aware of the fact that you hadn't kind of really done much in the way of writing. So I think maybe that's why you've sort of approached it with such enthusiasm. But I remember when he first spoke to me about it. And the only reason I know this is we've actually got a plaque up in Cheam Sports Club to commemorate the event when Tommy Doherty came to the club and did an evening with us, and it was 2011. And I'm pretty certain I actually recorded all of that and gave it to you, Tim. Is that right?
You did. And that was one of the seeds of the idea of the book, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, seeing Tommy Doherty, I've been to loads of these evenings where you know, you get ex-players speaking about their life and careers. And Doherty, who's obviously at Chelsea long before I knew what was going on, he's the only person that I've ever been to one of these things where you couldn't hear anybody. There was no whispering. And I guess, you know, part of the reason was, you know, he's quite softly spoken these days. Ah, here comes Misty. Yeah, so obviously when Tim said he wanted to do this book, I said, look, great idea, because it's one of those eras when, you know, there isn't much information out there. So you've really got to go and collate all the infos, go to the libraries and do all the forensic stuff in the newspapers, which Tim's done. And he submitted his manuscript to me. I've seen it once before, but this was his kind of like, look, this is as far as I can take it, stab, which he sent over to me last week, and I've gone through it with him. And it's great. I mean, you know, for people who love detail, they're going to love this book. I've even had to speak to him about a couple of his tables that he's compiled, which have gone too far.
Right. I should point out that at school, my best subject was statistics. And I just sat there one night and thought, well, what tables could I do from the data I've got? Which is not the way to approach it. The way you should approach it is, what tables would people be interested in? That's not quite the same thing. So, no, Mark's obviously been extremely helpful in sort of dampening down one or two of my sort of excesses in terms of content. But I think that the point is as well, I mean, I was lucky enough, I met Doherty 3 weeks ago. When we played at Man United, Nick Tilt, who runs the Duke of Edinburgh pub in Ascot, set me up to phone up Doc. He was happy to talk to me for 3 hours, went through loads of the issues, still coherent at the age of 89, and still as interesting as ever. Exactly what Mark said, you know, you hang on to his every word. Still loves Chelsea, still leaving Chelsea broke his heart. It's the favourite club of all the clubs he's been at, and it's the club where he's still in regular touch with Ron Harris. He still keeps in touch with Christine Matthews, who is on Twitter and on Facebook. And she used to be secretary of the club, so he knows what's going on with the older players. And he was so generous with his time. And he was, you know, he was fascinated about the book. I'm lucky that my wife is a skilled artist. She's done the cover. He loved the cover. So, yeah, I mean, I've got more. As time's gone on, I've realised I probably was wildly over-enthusiastic in terms of timing. But in terms of content, as Mark said, there was no substitute. I had to go to the British Library and wade through 6 years of newspapers. I thought it would take me 6 months, took me 8, but, you know, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it properly.
Jonathan, I really want to bring you on in here because, without being rude, I mean, you're a little bit older than all of us, I think. So I would imagine that you actually... I mean, Tim saw one Tommy Dot game. You would have seen a few more of those, I would have thought. I mean, what are your memories of that time?
Barry Bridges, I loved. Slightly one leg, slightly bandy. Was always being put through and always go around the goalkeeper and score. That was quite a great memory of him. Then he'd rush back and he had a particular way of celebrating, which was he'd punch the air. And I duplicated that whenever I scored. Because I loved him and he played for England. I was so pleased when he played for England. I'm bloody hell, I was 10. And I watched as many games as I possibly could. And I loved them all. I loved Bobby Tambling. I loved Bert Murray. Bert Murray played a huge number of games of that period. I loved George Graham, Stroller, as he was called, was also a great, he was a great player to watch. I don't know, it's difficult, you haven't got any idea of tactics when you're 8, 9, 10, 11, you're just watching them. And I loved it. Of course, Tommy Dot introduced the blue and white gear, because before that it was blue white with white socks and two little blue bands at the top. And that was so trendy at the time with the numbers. And I managed to get a kit, actually. My dad got me a kit. And my dad also got me a 1966 FA Cup semi-final kit, which for some godforsaken reason, this was against Sheffield Wednesday, which we lost 2-0, which I went to, was an Inter Milan kit. Why yep. they played in blue and black stripes is beyond me. But I bought that kit and then was forced to wear that, even though it just gave me memories of them losing. Then Jim McCalliog, who'd played for us, scored for Sheffield Wednesday against us, which similarly broke my heart because he'd been one of my favourite players. But who was the other one? Of course, players were started off under Doherty, who were ultimately became members of the great 1970 side, 69-70 side. So you got Charlie Cook in his infancy. He bought him. He was very keen on buying Scottish players, obviously because of his Scots connection. So you got Cook. You got there was a winger called Tommy Knox I liked who played.
There was. Yep.
Off and on. And of course, as you said, McCready. The wonderful Frank Upton, who, as I've said before on the show, when they beat Portsmouth 7-0 to come second in the second division for the last promotion game, actually scored a goal from the halfway line, but it was old offside law, and I think Tambling was coming back and was couldn't possibly get past him to be onside, so it was given offside. But that similarly was one of my great memories. And of course, there was the other Harris brother, Ronnie Harris, had his brother Alan Harris, who, if I remember, Tim, wasn't he transferred and then he came back again?
He went to Coventry.
That's
and then
right.
He, in late 64 and came back in about the same time as Charlie Cook in April 66. Went
66, straight that's right. When who died? Sorry.
He went straight into the side against Barcelona in the FES Cup semi-final, and he played the following season, played in the Cup final, and then Doherty sold him. So he was one of Chelsea had they were really unlucky because McCready was a fantastic overlapping fullback when no one else was doing it. That's and on right. the other side was Ken Shillitoe, who was also equally good at going forward, but he damaged his knee in 1963, and Chelsea brought in Joe Kirkup, Alan Harris, Jim Thompson, and none of them were quite good enough. And I think if Shillitoe had stayed fit, it's accepted that he would have played in the 66 World Cup instead of George Cohen. And I think, to be honest, if he'd stayed fit, Chelsea would probably have been an even better team than they were already.
Chidge.
JK, in all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great! I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18+, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yes. And also the other thing just to remember was they also had the FAIRS Cup run when they got to the semi-final and had to play an extra game, didn't they, against Barcelona?
Yeah.
Which was shown, they put some bizarre kind of sheet sheets up at the bridge to show it on. It was a kind of, there's this like screens, but they were sort of just basically, you know, bits of wood with sheets attached, as far as I could work out. And we unfortunately lost 5-0. And I was there, of course, watching it with my little rattle. And it was such a shame because they'd had such a wonderful season playing in Europe. They were fabulous side.
Yeah, but the problem was that season as well. Terry Venables fell out with Doherty and was sold. Barry Bridges fell out with Doherty. He was sold. Murray went in the summer. I mean, what happened in the latter part of Doherty's reign was he did fall out with a number of players. He fell out with George Graham. Venables particularly, he's not got a bad word to say for almost anybody, Doherty, but he's got plenty of bad words to say for Terry Venables. And they're all in the book. So I'll save those for the book, but there's plenty there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, talking of which, I mean, because you've got this fantastic blog site that you set up, kind of following the progress of the book, and one of the things that caught my eye in terms of the narrative of the book is that, you know, clearly you go into the players and some of the famous victories and numbing defeats, as you call it.
Indeed.
But you also talk about, you know, Stamford Bridge and what the crowds and the atmosphere was like, and the new West End as it was then, and the Shed, of course. And of course, that's really when it was that era when the Shed really came into its own, wasn't it?
It was. Now, the book isn't really about the supporters, but it does talk about the ground, about we played a cup tie against Spurs before the West Stand was built. There were 70,000 in the ground, 159 people treated by St John's Ambulance. 3 crash barriers went. There could have been, you know, serious problems. That's why they built the West Stand to sort of maintain the capacity. But the Shed, I think it was September 66 when the Clifford Webb's letter in the programme named the Shed. And I think the season before, people had started singing. But the book's not primarily about that. But certainly in those 6 years, you went from grounds where there was no singing and very few people went to away games to a situation where there was proper atmosphere coming in the grounds and far more people went away.
Mm. I mean, one of the other things that you mentioned, which I hope you might just shed a little bit of light on now, actually. And by the way, that you've got a couple of friends or brothers in arms, I think, in Mixler. Planet Earth is Blue was clearly around in that era. I mean, he just said that I was at the Spurs game and it was frightening. And he's also hated Barca ever since. But, you know, you allude to the rows and the fallouts, but you talk about Blackpool, Roma, Bermuda and many more. Just to enlighten some of the younger listeners on the Blackpool, the Roma and the Bermuda issues, if you can.
Roma, we played them in the Fairs Cup in late 1965. This is the precursor of the UEFA Cup, which is the precursor of the Europa League. We beat them 4-1 at home. Eddie McCready was sent off. We went out there, the Italian press hyped up that we'd kicked them in the first game. The Chelsea team were pelted with missiles on the pitch. John Boyle was hit by a stone. Benetti was hit by a stone. And then on the coach was attacked on the way back to the hotel. And Roma were banned from Europe, I think, for 3 years. Doherty said it was the most scary thing he'd ever experienced in his life. But Chelsea won and went through. But it's, you know, when I was young, I read a book called I Was There, which was a famous journalist talking about particular football matches. And Brian Butler, who used to write for The Telegraph and was a BBC radio journalist, talked about that game and said it was the most, and this is a man who I think fought in the war, and said that what happened at that game, because they were attacking the press, they were attacking the Chelsea coaches, that they moved the Chelsea bench, so they had to sit behind people throwing missiles at them. You know, it was pretty scary. But to Chelsea's great credit, they didn't respond to any of this. The players didn't respond. I don't think there were many away supporters. To be honest, we probably only took a few to the game. And, you know, the Minister of Sport, Dennis Follows, praised the team for their, you know, for not reacting. But the other two I mentioned, Blackpool and Bermuda. Like Blackpool is where 8 Chelsea players were sent home by Doherty for going out. He set a curfew of 11 o'clock and they didn't get back till well after midnight, a couple of days before a game against Burnley. Now, the myth is that stopped Chelsea winning the league. It didn't stop Chelsea winning the league because
they were already in a position where they were, I think, 5 points behind Man United or whatever. But what it did do, he sent them home, and that included Venables, Bridges, Murray, George Graham, John Hollins, Joe Fascione, and a couple of others who escaped. He sent them home. It was front page in all the papers. It was the main story on the news. And this is in the days when football wasn't front page news. Bridges and Venables particularly never forgave him for the way that they were treated. It was just before the end of the season, and you know, it sort of died down a bit over the summer, but then blew up the following season. But if you can imagine, it wouldn't happen these days, and because the club would keep it in house. But Doherty arranged for the press to be at Euston when the players got back on the train from Blackpool, and they were put into a van laid on by Chelsea, where the police were there, and it looked like they were all being arrested. There's a photograph of Barry Bridges and Marvin Hinton looking like they're great train robbers. I mean, it's an astonishing thing. And he admits now he got it wrong. He admits he overreacted. And a lot of the players never forgave him, and half of them had gone within 18 months. Bermuda, Chelsea went on tour summer 67, without going into, this is the one area he wouldn't really talk about, but there were two rows with referees. He got into a couple of Chelsea players, Barry Lloyd and Tony Hayden, got sent off in different games. He had rows with the referee, made some very uncomplimentary comments to them. That was in sort of June 67. Come late September 67, the players, everyone was back, the season had started, Chelsea weren't doing well, and the FA decided to do an investigation. Banned Doherty for 28 days for abusing the officials, and he was called in by the club and basically was sacked. I mean, he was described as by mutual consent, but clearly he was sacked and paid off. And I think that was the last straw. The book details a whole load of ways, rows about ticket allocations, rows with players, rows with the chairman, because the chairman for most of his reign was Joe Mears, Brian Mears' father, and the you know, descendant of Gus Mears, who founded the club. Tragically, he died summer of 1966, and a bloke called Bill Pratt took over. And the fact that the Shed was singing "Our Chairman is a Pratt" gives you some idea. In what respect, and he had public rows with Doherty in the press, which again just wouldn't happen now. And wow. It was inevitable that Doherty was going to go, and in the end, you know, he went. But it's just a shame it ended like that. I think a lot of the players, you know, were sorry that he'd gone. I think a lot of the supporters clearly were sorry that he'd gone, because the game afterwards, after he'd been sacked, the day after he went, Chelsea lost 7-0 at Leeds. And the carriage on the train with the Chelsea board was attacked by supporters, and Pratt was reduced to leaning out of the window at Wakefield Station asking for help from a passing porter.
That is fantastic. Tim, look, final question on the content before we actually get into the kind of how people can get hold of this fantastic piece of work. You know, my kind of take on the Doherty's diamonds and that era really was it really was the kind of the beginning of modern Chelsea, if you like.
Yeah.
And we were getting close to winning the league. We won the League Cup. We got to the Cup final. You know, there was a sense that things were happening under Doherty, and we had some great players. If he had not have been got rid of, how far do you think he would have been able to take them?
Well, that's an interesting question, because they replaced him with Dave Sexton, who was completely different, who had been his assistant, you know, for a few years from sort of 63 to 65. I'm not sure how much further he could have taken them. I think he was unlucky when Ozzy broke his leg, because he was rebuilding the team around Osgood and Cook. He got rid of Bridges and Venables and Graham and Murray, and he was rebuilding the team. To be honest, he made mistakes buying a couple of defenders, and Sexton sorted that out. He brought in John Dempsey and Dave Webb. So maybe it was the time. Maybe the time was right. I don't know. It's impossible to say. But I do think if Osgood hadn't broken his leg in October 66, Chelsea might, they were top of the league at the time, might quite possibly won the league that season.
and everything would have been very, very different. But who knows?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, we would have gone on to win the European Cup and not Man United, of course.
What indeed?
Well, you know, that's a lovely note to end that bit of the narrative, I think. So, look, you know, the book's done, obviously. But you're basically you're launching a crowdfunding campaign on Thursday 11th. Why is that happening?
Right. We are doing a paperback version and an e-book version, but I wanted to do photographs. And photographs are expensive, and Mark and I talked about this. We bounced this around for months. The only way to see if there's enough interest there in a hardback book with photographs is to do crowdfunding, where if you get sufficient pledges. In this case, the books are £25, including UK postage. If we get 200 pledges, then we will produce the hardback book. If we get more than 200, then that's great, but we need a minimum of 200. Because I wanted to do, it was a personal choice. I just wanted to do it with photographs, and that because licensing photographs, doing it properly, ratchets the price up. Producing hardbacks, again, it ratchets the price up, but it's something I wanted to do. Now, if we don't get 200 orders, we're still going ahead with the paperback and the ebook anyway, and that will be coming out in the autumn. But what we want to do, just to correct you, these won't be available in the shop. The hardbacks will in shops. It's a matter of ordering it online through this Kickstarter page, which will go live on Thursday. And information on that, the link for that will be put up on the blog, which is, can you tweet this from the Fancast thing, the blog email address?
I'll read it out in a minute. I've got the URL for the blog thing, and I've also got your Twitter address.
The Twitter address is the easy one. That's docs@ Docs Diamonds. And I think on there will be it'll have a link to the blog, which tells you about the book, and to the Kickstarter page, which is how you can make a pledge. The paperback and the ebook we'll worry about in the autumn. But we're doing this now, and we've got 40 days. The idea being that you open it on Thursday, it closes on the 20th of June. If we get sufficient interest, then we'll go ahead with it. And the idea is to produce that book in the autumn. I'm nervous about, and Mark's nervous as well, about naming specific dates, because you just never know with these things.
But especially given current experience with the Eddie McCready book.
Yes, indeed. But the pledge is, the commitment is that people would get it before Christmas. We are on the page, it tells you how much the prices are for the European Union, which is £30, including postage, and the US and the rest of the world is £35. It's all there. It will be on Twitter. I will be fair to say there'll be a promotional campaign that anyone who uses Twitter or Facebook, who follows me, who follows, hopefully, the Fancast and whatever, I'll be encouraging people to retweet. I'll be emailing people I haven't seen in 20 years. So that I'll be doing as much as I can to push it, and if we don't get the interest, I'll be disappointed. But at least we've had a go. I have some faith that we will get those orders. But we'll the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. But it goes live on Thursday, and I would if people want to know more about it, look at if you go onto the Twitter or follow the Twitter account, that's got links to the blog. The Kickstarter address I don't get until Thursday morning when it goes live, and that will be all over social media, and it will be on the blog, and it will be on Twitter, so you'll be able to find it.
So, right, just to recap on all of that, you're looking to basically you need to pre-sell 200 or of these books in the deluxe hardback version. Why is it deluxe, by the way?
Because it's hardback. Deluxe is
deluxe is hung in. There we go. Lovely, lovely stuff.
It's a hardback book. And you know,
and therefore deluxe. And therefore deluxe. Absolutely. No question required.
By definition. People said to me, 25 quid's a lot, but that is the economics. Producing a low run hardback book. So that's, you know.
Fantastic. That's so anyway, you know, bottom line is you need to sell 200 of these at 25 quid a pop.
Yeah.
And that will enable you to produce the hardback version, which we hope will come out sometime before Christmas. Yeah. The best way to get the information, just to recap on that for Tim, is follow Tim's book account on Twitter, which is at DocsDiamonds, D-O-C-S Diamonds. And his blog can be found at diamondsdynamosanddevils.wordpress.com. So, I mean, you know, I'm in for a copy of that and then some. And I'm sure many, many people will. JK, you'll be lapping that up, I suspect.
Oh, yes. Blimey, I'll be straight in there. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Looking forward good to stuff. It. Marvellous. Well done. And, well done, Tim. Brilliant.
And final point. Yeah, thank you, Tim. That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, the comments I've been watching on Mixlr about you talking about this book have been absolutely superb. If only you could see them. In fact, actually, why don't I just read a few out? That might be. I mean, Planet Earth is Blue is clearly hooked. He says, well, I'm having two hardbacks. And he says that your next book should be Sexton Sizzlers. So there we go. Bob Ouseray says, this is great stuff. Tim tells a good yarn, says Ali Fragley. Bonnie Rigg Blue says, you could listen to Tim all night on here. Great stuff. Do you know what, Bonnie Rigg? I and I'm sure Marco and Jonathan would agree, we could listen to him all night, but sadly we can't. We really need to go to the next part of the show. But I loved him to pieces. I know it'll be a cracking book. I'd like to say thank you, as always, to Marco for enabling people like Tim to get these books out to the
absolutely
masses.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have happened. It would not have happened without Mark. So, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, Mark is a hugely unsung hero in this domain, and I think, you know, he's been so instrumental in getting such great, great, great books out there, and he really, he deserves a huge amount of gratitude and thanks from all of us. Ain't that right, chaps?
Yes,
absolutely. Done.
Good. All right. Well, you know what to do, people. You need to go into that crowdfunding site as of Thursday and go and get yourselves a book, because I think it's going to be a cracker. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.